This is Amerinds. Hi again, this is Arthur, a gay American now living in New Zealand. Welcome to episode 57 of my podcast for Tuesday, November 27th, 2007. This past weekend was the Australian federal elections, and I'm going to talk about that a bit first today. Then after that, I've got a bit more information about being an expat, a couple of things I actually forgot to mention in that episode, and then some comments, and a listener has told me about a sweepstakes that my American listeners can enter, and then I also have the results from the latest poll on my blog. But first up, the Australian elections. They were just held this past Saturday, and as I'm sure you've heard by now, the Australian Labor Party, or ALP, defeated the Conservative government of John Howard, who also is virtually certain to have lost his seat as well. It's the reason I have to qualify that is because it's not a certified election yet, and it's nevertheless highly improbable that Howard will get back into Parliament. Now, there were a lot of issues that were specific to Australia, the sorts of things that people outside the country wouldn't really know much about or care much about, even necessarily, to be honest. Things like labor relations and education and broadband, things like that. However, there were other issues that were more generally applicable, you could say. One of them is that Kevin Rudd, who is the new Prime Minister of Australia, has promised that his first official action will be to ratify the Kyoto Agreement. Now, because of that, Australia has been invited, and Kevin Rudd specifically, has been invited to the UN climate change meeting in Indonesia coming up soon, in a couple of weeks, I think it is. Australia had been barred from the meeting, I suppose is a better word, because it had failed to ratify the Kyoto protocols. Well, since Kevin Rudd has said that Australia now will ratify Kyoto, they've been invited, which means that the United States is the only major nation left on the planet that hasn't ratified Kyoto, and which could be a bit of a problem for the U.S. going forward when it tries to come to international agreements, when the rest of the world community is sort of moving beyond the U.S., or moving around the U.S., I suppose you could say. But related to that is that Kevin Rudd is going to withdraw Australian troops from Iraq. Now, there are only a few hundred troops, I think, in Australian troops in Iraq, as I recall. They have far more in Afghanistan than they do in Iraq. But nevertheless, it's another part of the coalition of the willing, which is no longer so willing. And it leaves Bush and his private contractors to wage the war pretty much alone, with little support from a few of them, a few smaller countries. Be that as it may, those are the two sort of headline issues for other countries, you could say, the Kyoto, or climate change in general, and Australia withdrawing from Iraq. But beyond that, most countries, including the U.S. and New Zealand and other countries, are likely to see very little difference. And that's because in this day and age, a lot of the general policies are more or less continuous from government to government. It's true in Australia, it's true in New Zealand, it's even true to a large extent in the U.S., although it may not seem that way sometimes. So there will be kind of a continuation of the way things have been. What could be expected from the Labor government, will be maybe more of a concern for the average Australian, what they often call the Aussie battler. That's a matter of opinion. If you support Labor and its policies, you're likely to agree with that. If you don't, then you're likely to not agree with that. Time will tell. But it's nevertheless true that the general larger issues will remain largely unchanged, which is, I mean, that's a matter for Australians to work out. It really doesn't concern people outside of the country by and large. But nevertheless, there's a lot of curiosity about that, and in particular for the fate of Australia's GLBT communities. And you won't see a whole lot of difference there either. Now, Kevin Rudd, the new prime minister, is a Christian, but not in the politically active sense that, say, that Americans would understand that term, or even a lot of Australians, I suppose. He was born a Catholic, but he converted to the Anglican Church at some stage, which is what he still attends in his native Queensland. And he has brought up his Christian values several times, and one of the candidates to replaced John Howard as leader of the Liberal Party, criticized him for that in the campaign. But be that as it may, he nevertheless doesn't promote fundamentalist Christian values, certainly. But he is completely opposed to same-sex marriage. He believes that marriage should be defined as between one man and one woman, and he supported John Howard when John Howard forced through that definition in Australia back in 2004, I think it was, as a wedge issue in the campaign back then. Now, it essentially means that GLBT people will see no real change in the way things are done. However, I do think that the Australian Labor Party is far less likely to use gay people as scapegoats or political footballs than the Conservative coalition government was, because it's just not in the nature of Labor politicians to deliberately try to divide communities as it is oftentimes for Conservative politicians. The best, probably, that GLBT people can hope for is that there will be some sort of recognition of civil unions, and that they will be transferable between states and also the states of Australia and between other countries that recognize civil unions. Not just a partner registry of some kind, but some sort of civil union that a bit like New Zealand has, that conveys all the rights and privileges of marriage without calling it marriage. That's probably the best that Australians can hope for. But, I mean, I could be surprised. I certainly don't think that any moves will happen in the next 3 years during this first term. Assuming that the ALP is reelected in 3 years' time, then it's possible that there might be some action then. But we'll just have to wait and see. The gist of what I'm trying to tell you is that I don't expect to see a whole lot of dramatic change, except in certain areas, most of them internal to Australia, including reconciliation with the Aboriginal people of Australia. I would expect the ALP will make far more strides in that direction than the coalition did in 11 and a half years. But I don't expect that the relations with the world will change at all, really. And I don't expect that GLBT Australians will see a whole lot of improvement either. So those are just a few words about the Australian elections that I wanted to share with you. I have two posts about the subject on my blog, amrins.com. One is about the election itself. It's called Howard's End. I couldn't resist. And the other is called Election Lessons, I think. I should have checked that before I started recording, but I didn't. And that's essentially talking about how some politicians in New Zealand have been trying to suggest that there's a parallel, because John Howard had been both the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Helen Clark, and the now defeated John Howard were prime ministers of their respective countries for about a decade, give or take. They both were formidable campaigners and both ran their governments with a very strong hand and those kinds of things. And so the suggestion from the opposition is that that means that Helen Clark will lose the next election. And of course, that's nonsense. And the main reason I can say that is because history doesn't bear out that assumption. In 1996, John Howard won government from the Australian Labor Party, which had been in power for a number of years. Later that same year, New Zealand had an election and re-elected its conservative government. It didn't elect Labor. So there's no reason to think that all of a sudden New Zealand is going to start doing the same sort of thing that Australia did. I mean, the two are very different countries. They've got different politics. And there's another factor as well. And again, I've mentioned this in my blog. And that is that New Zealand's political system is different from Australia's. In Australia, it's essentially a two-party system. There are some independents, and in the Senate, there are certainly other parties. But essentially, you're going to be either part of the coalition or you're going to be Labour. In New Zealand, it's a multi-party system, and no one party has won enough seats to govern by itself since this system was first introduced in the 1996 election. And if an election were held now, neither Labour nor National would have enough seats, I'm convinced of that, to govern alone. And they would have to form a coalition with a smaller party. Now, Labour has far more options when it comes to negotiating a coalition than National does, because National is to the right of centre, and there's only one party that's decidedly right of centre, and it only has two MPs at the moment. And so, because of that as well, at the moment, it's far more likely that Labour can negotiate a coalition government than National can. But the New Zealand election is a year away, roughly, and anything can happen in a year. A year is a long time. I mean, who knows? It's even possible that Labour will win outright. It's highly unlikely, but it could happen. And it's also possible that National may win the next election. It's too early to tell. And the one thing I can say with certainty is that the results of the Australian election will have no bearing whatsoever on what happens in the New Zealand elections next year. Now, I'd like to switch gears and go back to the subject of being an expat, because there are a couple of things I forgot to mention when I was talking about all that. And they're sort of nuts and bolts issues for U.S. citizens. And I'm sure that there are similar things for people from other countries, but I can only speak about being an American citizen living in another country. And first of those is taxes, income taxes. Now, when you live in another country, you don't necessarily have to pay U.S. income tax. I say necessarily because the country you live in has to have a tax treaty with the U.S., which essentially allows you to pick one country or the other to pay income tax to. Now, there are dozens and dozens of these treaties, and chances are any country you might pick to move to is going to have a tax treaty with the U.S. So let's assume that it does, as New Zealand does. What that means is that for the rest of your life, you have to file an annual tax return, and you have to file the long form, and you have to file another form which allows you to exclude all of your foreign income from U.S. income tax. And unfortunately, the U.S. tax year and the New Zealand tax year are completely different, so I have to keep two sets of records. But be that as it may, most of the income that you would get in a foreign country is probably exempt from U.S. tax. The amount goes up every year. It's indexed to inflation. But I think it's currently about $87,000 a year is tax-free, or tax-exempt, I should say. And then over that, you have to pay tax to the U.S. government. Well, that's a heck of a lot of money for an average person, and they're unlikely to breach that. If you have income that's from the U.S., it gets a little bit more dicey, and you might need an accountant to help sort that out. But providing that all of your income is in the country you're living in, it's much simpler and straightforward, and you shouldn't have any tax obligations in the U.S. But nevertheless, you're going to have to file every single year for the rest of your life. Now, the only way to get out of that is to renounce your U.S. citizenship and no longer be a U.S. citizen. But that seems to be a pretty drastic way to avoid the odious burden of tax paperwork, it seems to me. Yeah, so it's a bit of a nuisance, I suppose. But that's just the way it is. Now, here in New Zealand, of course, most wage and salary earners don't file an income tax return at all because it's been fine-tuned so much that it will match precisely and you don't need to file a return. In New Zealand, we don't have all the deductions and exemptions that American taxpayers have. So there's really no need to do that. But the other thing, and it's related to taxes in a way, is voting. All U.S. citizens, wherever they live in the world, have the right to vote in U.S. elections. Now, if you're going to a country temporarily, like say your company is going to station you in a country for 6 months, then you would probably vote by absentee ballot from your home state. And just like you would any other time you'd vote absentee, like say I did when I was in university, for example. And that would be state, federal, and local elections. You can vote that way. But if you've moved overseas permanently, as I have, then you are still entitled to vote in federal elections, which is for president, U.S. senator, and U.S. representative. You register with your county, your local authority, usually a county, I think, in most states, using the last address you were registered at, regardless of whether you live there. Nobody will send mail to that address, so that doesn't matter. It doesn't, if it's a house that you sold, none of that matters. They just have to be able to pin your identity to where you used to be, I guess you could say. And it is important to allow plenty of time for the ballot to move through the mail and to get it back to them. Very often, I mean, they send it to you quite early. What you'll sometimes get is a paper ballot first in case the real one isn't ready in time. But I've sent the ballot back by, it's equivalent of FedEx. It's a courier. It's actually, in the U.S., it's delivered by DHL, I think. But it costs a small fortune to do that, but I wanted to make sure that it got there in time. If with enough planning ahead of time, you can probably send it in without having to worry too much. And since there's only a potential of three people you have to vote for, president, senator, and representative, you can get through the ballot pretty quickly. So you could probably mail it back the same day you get it. But it is, you're right, previous government administrations rather have tried to have been less than willing to make that possible, and there's always been talk of changing the rules. But it's highly unlikely that the voting laws will be tightened up in any way, because the history has always been towards opening up, not restricting, which is one of the reasons why the Real ID Act is so faulty. But that's a whole other subject. And also there has been talk from time to time about removing the exemption for foreign earned income. But that's unlikely to happen either, because, there's no political will, and it makes no sense whatsoever either. But those are just a few issues that I should have mentioned last time and completely forgot about it. But I also received an email, and I don't know if I should mention the name, because it was more of a personal nature. But essentially the question was, how can somebody who's back home support their friend or loved one, family member, whatever, who's moved to another country? You know, what sort of positive things can they do? And so I had a few suggestions, and I thought I would pass them along, just in case any of you are in the situation of having a friend or family member who's moved to another country. And first is, if they're talking to you about a country, they may from time to time just need to vent and talk about things that are frustrating them, because as I talked about in that episode about expats, there are a whole range of emotions that you're going through, and sometimes you just need to vent your frustrations. And sometimes the best thing you can do is just to listen. Understand that you may not know what they're talking about, but I mean, there are plenty of times when any one of us has had to give support to somebody when we don't understand at all what they're going through. This is really no different. The only thing that's changed is the distance involved, perhaps. So that's one thing. Another thing that never goes amiss are care packages. And what you send will depend on where the person is, obviously. And also keep in mind, if you're planning on sending food, there are some things that are prohibited from entering some countries. For example, you cannot send honey to New Zealand, or I think Australia either, I'm pretty sure, because of the risk of contamination that would infect New Zealand's native bees. Well, I don't even know if they're native, but anyway, the bees in New Zealand. And that could wipe out agriculture. It could wipe out clover, which sounds odd, but that's important for the pasture land that the cattle and sheep graze on. So all of these kinds of things, you have to be aware of what's legal to send into a country. But some of the things I can suggest are, say, a U.S. magazine or maybe the Sunday newspaper from a major city that that your expat really loved. Send them that sort of thing. So that those are the kinds of things you could think about. Basically, just sending them a little bit of home. And just beyond that, it's just the normal sort of thing. Just keep in touch, send them photos, let them know what's going on with you. And be aware that they may sometimes feel a bit homesick, especially in the early years, and may be a bit lonely for the friends and family they've left behind. So you just might want to, try to do a little bit to let them know you're thinking about them, I guess. In my own case, since I've been here so many years, these things aren't as important as they used to be. But when I first arrived in New Zealand, my friend Reed in particular used to send me a lot of care packages. And it really did help, because it made me just feel a little bit more at home. And not long after I arrived in New Zealand, Borders Books and Music opened up in Auckland, and they used to carry the Sunday Chicago Tribune. Well, granted, it was several weeks late by the time I got here, but at least it was the Sunday Tribune. And so I used to go specifically to get that, because I enjoyed it and, keeping up with what was going on at home. This is before the internet was as pervasive as it is now. Now I just read it online, but in those days it really did help. I'm going to go on now to the comments. I will say that I have no comments about the Thanksgiving episode, which doesn't surprise me, because it is far and away the least popular episode I've ever put out. But considering that the vast majority of my listeners are in the United States, I suppose it's not surprising that since I released it during the holiday weekend. So I'm not going to even bother commenting on that anymore. I'm just going to go on to comment about episode 55. And before I get into the written comments, I thought first I would play an audio comment from Nick in Paris.
Hi there, it's Nick in Paris. I don't often get a chance to comment on your podcast, but I'm at home today because of the strikes, and I've just listened to number 55, and I wanted to let you know how much I enjoyed it. You've been doing some fantastic podcasts lately, and I really enjoyed the podcast you did about being an expat wanted to let you know how much a lot of what you said resonated with me and my move to Paris. It's funny, I used to tend to not think of myself as an expat, but I think I'm just, I think it's just playing with words. I think in reality I'm very much an expat. And it was really interesting to hear your descriptions, really well presented and thought out. I just wanted to let you know that. So I hope you're doing well. I was completely off the mark and missed you, your 12th anniversary with Nigel and the team in New Zealand and your 50th podcast. So belated congratulations and you know more listening. Take care and speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that, Nick. It's really nice of you. Nick mentioned the strikes in passing, and he talked about that quite a bit in his most recent podcast, episode 64. And I found that fascinating to hear sort of a firsthand account of dealing with the strikes in Paris. Because you hear about it on the news, and just it doesn't really quite mean as much until you hear somebody describing what they personally are going through. And of course, in general, Nick's podcast has been one of my favorites for quite a long time. So thank you again for ringing, Nick, and it's also good to hear that we share some of the same experiences, in a way. But now on to the written comments, and first up was Archer, who said, "Great thoughts about being an expat. I don't think I'll ever be an expat, but if I am, I'll know what to expect. Happy Thanksgiving." And I said, "Well, you never know. A year or so before I moved here, I would have said the same thing, apart from the Thanksgiving part." Well, I suppose I would have that, too. So it was about that time of year. And then next up was Nick, who is an American expat in New Zealand. Different Nick. And he says, "Another excellent show as always. Entirely off topic, what do you use for the home internet provider? Do you have broadband? We're shopping around for a new house and trying to get an idea of what people recommend out there." And I said, "Thanks, that's great coming from a fellow expat." And I didn't want to go into a whole lot of detail about various kinds of ISPs and things. But in the comments, if you want to go there yourself, I do have a link to a customer satisfaction survey that was conducted by Consumer Magazine. And the gist of it is that there are a few that are standouts, a couple that are really bad, and the vast majority are somewhere between the two, which is kind of what you'd expect, I suppose. But those were the written comments, well, actually all the comments for episode 55. And I also have received an email, which I wanted to share with you. And it's from Condo Blogger. And it said, "I know I haven't been a very good blog reader, podcast, and listener lately. It's been difficult to find the time lately. Still, I pop in now and then, and I'm always glad to hear you and yours are well. I thought you and your readers might be interested in the sweepstakes," and he provides a link. But the reason I wanted to read that is I just wanted to reiterate that, I mean, I love every comment that I get, comment, email, voice message, all of them. They provide a sort of validation, I suppose, for what I'm doing. But I don't want anybody to ever feel obligated to leave a comment of any sort, because if you feel obligated, it's not fun anymore, and then there's no point in it. But if you do feel so motivated, by all means, do leave a comment on my blog at amrens.com, or you can leave a voicemail message, and I'll go through all the contact details at the end. But the sweepstakes that Condo Blogger told me about is from 42 Below Vodka. Now, 42 Below is a New Zealand-made vodka, and it takes its name from its latitude, 42 degrees south latitude, which is 42 below. Get it? And it's also 42% alcohol, which is a bit high among vodkas. I think generally about 36%. So it's a little bit stronger than your typical vodka, and it's in the same sort of league as other premium vodkas like Finlandia, for instance, or something like that. And they have a range from plain to flavored. Now, I don't normally do advertorial endorsements or anything because nobody's paid me to do that. However, I have had 42 Below, and for premium vodkas, I quite like it. It's like most premium vodkas, it's really quite smooth. And if you like that, if you like spirits, if you like vodkas, if you like imported vodkas, by all means, give it a go. But the contest is open only to people who live in the U.S., and, of course, you have to be 21 or older, the drinking age. It's not valid in Alaska, California, Hawaii, Utah. And for some reason, residents in Tennessee have to enter by mail. I have no idea why that would be. But what you have to do is you've got to go to the website, which is winter@42below.com. That's winter@42below.com. Winter@42below is one word. And then you're supposed to read the rules, and then you complete your mailing address, email address, and date of birth, and they're all required. And so that's how you enter. And what you get, and I'll just read it directly from their rules, grand prizes are two grand prize winners, and they will each receive a trip for two to New Zealand. Each grand prize consists of round-trip economy air travel for a winner and a guest in New Zealand from the major commercial airport nearest the grand prize winner's residence, as determined by a sponsor. Double occupancy hotel accommodation for 7 days and six nights. Ground transportation to from hotel. $1,000 spending money, awarded as a check. And it's the total approximate retail value of the trip is $15,000. Actual value will be determined by each winner's residence and fare fluctuations. Blah, 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 blah. But essentially, it's an opportunity to win a trip to New Zealand, if you're so inclined, by going to the website. Apparently, you don't have to purchase anything. You can just go to the website and enter your details, and you might win a trip to New Zealand. But one of the things I thought was kind of funny about the thing is when you go to the site, it's very bare bones, the entry form, the sweepstakes. But down at the bottom, it says, New Zealanders agree, drink responsibly. I don't know what that's got to do with anything. I mean, the drink responsibly, I get that, but New Zealanders agree. I mean, it's kind of bizarre. But thanks, Condo Blogger, for sending me the notice of that sweepstakes. And you can enter up until 11:59 p.m. on December 31st. So you have plenty of time, but give it a go. You never know. You might win a trip to New Zealand. And if you do, I will be happy to shout you your own vodka when you get here. Or whatever else you choose. Even bottled water. I'm not fussy. Now, in the last episode, I have been running a poll on my blog, which the question was, regardless of what you actually have, do you think Christmas is better in hot weather or cold? And the response, I had 22 responses, which is fairly large for one of these little polls, which are totally meaningless, just entertainment value. But the responses were hot weather, 2, which is 9%, cold weather, 15, which is 68%, I don't care, was 3, or 13%, and what's this, a trick question promoting New Zealand summer? Got 2 votes, or 9%. And clearly, most people prefer cold weather Christmases, and I don't know if that's because most of my listeners are in the U.S., where it's colder, or what the story is. I have reason to believe that Nigel may have been one of the ones asking if it was a trick question, but it was not, although we do have summer Christmas, of course, and I'm going to talk about that more next month as we get a bit closer. Not much sense to talk about it now. And I shouldn't promise this, but I hope to do a video about Auckland and Christmas, just a short video. But that's in the coming up. But I have added a new poll, and the question is, because of this vodka sweepstakes, I thought, what the heck? The question is, which New Zealand alcoholic beverages have you tried? Check all that apply. New Zealand white wine, New Zealand red wine, New Zealand beer, New Zealand spirits, like vodka, none of these, and I don't drink alcohol. So you can answer any of those that you wish. And that will run until next week. And finally, I just wanted to mention, because I keep forgetting to, that I am on MySpace and Facebook and Twitter. And if you do a search for Amarins, you're likely to find me pretty easily if you're a member of those services. So by all means, go ahead and friend me. And always looking for more friends. And feel free to leave a comment on my blog, which is amarins.com. Or you can ring my listener line at 206-339-8413. And of course, you can send an email to me at amarins@yahoo.com. But that's it for this episode of the Amarins Podcast. I'll be back again on Friday with another one. Take care, everybody, and have a great week. Bye.